U.S. forces have intensified their attacks against the Houthi rebels in Yemen. For the first time, protests, public protests, are now taking place in Gaza against Hamas by Palestinians. Hamas continues to reject any ceasefire hostage idea for release, and the security breach that supposedly took place being discussed this last week concerning the U.S. attack on the Houthis, we're going to talk about that. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion of Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is Friday, March 28th of the year 2025. And here's the news for the week. The United States Navy and the Air Forces are carrying out intensive attacks now on the Houthi rebels in Yemen. Multiple attacks have been coming forth from the aircraft carriers that are there, surface warfare ships, as well as Air Force long-range bombers. We just got the news that not only do we have that one aircraft carrier there, but they've been extended in their deployment. They're going to remain on scene, and they're going to be joined very shortly by a second aircraft carrier battle group. And so they're going to have two full aircraft carrier battle groups over in the Middle East to deal with the Houthi rebels. They will get additional surface warfare ships with additional cruise missiles and Tomahawk cruise missiles. There's also a good possibility there will be increased B-2 attacks and long-range bomber attacks. And we can only guess that there probably will be special warfare operations on the ground to help nail additional targets. According to reports, the U.S. military has been hitting multiple targets as opposed to just going after missile launchers and missiles. They've been hitting command and control areas where the command elements are at with the Houthis, including barracks and buildings that house their troops, as well as port facilities, airport facilities, storage facilities. But probably the most significant thing that has happened in the intensification of the warfare there is the White House is no longer calling for the missions to be done. They have delegated all military operations down to U.S. CENTCOM, and so we have generals and admirals now directing the war, and they're determining the targets to go, and so they're doing it on the basis of pure military intelligence to eliminate the enemy. No longer are the attacks being politically motivated or charged, like being directed from the White House. Instead, Trump has turned the job over to the DOD and said, go get them. Now, the goal of the U.S. military in attacking the Houthis is very clear. They want the Houthis to stop sending missiles, ICBMs, if you will, into Israel. And they also want them to stop attacking shipping that's going through the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, and the Straits of Aden there. As you know, as a result of those attacks, the world has had stopped sending their shipping through the Suez Canal down through that area. Instead, they're having to sail all around to below Africa to be able to make their way to those other parts of the world. The U.S. Navy has a mission to keep all sea lanes open, and they are now performing that mission to take place. Additionally, at the same time, we're also hearing beyond those statements that there are rumors, and I put it in that category, that the U.S. is amassing additional U.S. forces to the Middle East, including references to many B-52s and much of the B-2 and B-1 bombing force. Now, if that's what's taking place, that the DOD and the U.S. CENTCOM is calling for additional assets, it seems like a little bit of an overkill for what is necessary to take out the Houthis in Yemen. But it may speak to something future that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, and that is the subject of Iran. If you remember, the president sent a letter back a few weeks ago urging Khomeini, you've got to start negotiating with people about shutting down your nuclear program and your activities with proxies in the Middle East. And if you don't do it and don't enter into negotiations about that, then the military option is going to be used against you. And basically, Trump talked about all hell breaking loose. Now, it might be that CENTCOM is actually getting ready for a military operation. According to that timeline of that letter and the time that he was giving them, we're still looking at the end of April in that time frame. However, there's nothing stopping the U.S. from doing it earlier if they believe it's necessary, particularly if they get evidence that the Iranians are trying to put together a nuclear weapon themselves. That would move the schedule up quite quickly. We're also not necessarily hearing what Israel is planning on doing should that happen, but we do know this. We do know that Israel did participate with the U.S. in supplying special intelligence for the targeting of weapons that were down in Yemen with the Houthi rebels. In Gaza, we saw something for the last 3 days we've never seen before, and that is a large mass of Palestinian citizens gathering to protest publicly Hamas. They are sick and tired of the destruction that has come to Gaza, to their homes and their communities, as a result of what Hamas started back October 7th in their attack on Israel and the way the IDF has responded. And they know, the citizens know, that Israel is not stopping. They are coming in. They're going to level the place. They're going to take out Hamas. And so the citizens of Gaza are finally rising up and saying, we don't want Hamas anymore. That's what's been going on for the last 3 days. Amazingly, we don't see Hamas going in and shooting fellow Palestinian cities, citizens doing the protesting, but don't put it beyond them. At the moment, Hamas, when they were asked about these protests, they're saying that they're protesting against Israel. Well, anybody who looks at the protests and listens to what the protests are saying, they're not protesting against Israel, they're protesting against Hamas. And that's new for us to see in Gaza. The IDF are still continuing their Gaza operations and increasing them, including more airstrikes, including drone strikes, and tanks and tank support, armored support is moving into the areas. They're having to go slow at it to clear areas out, move the civilians out to safe areas, and going in and taking the ground away from Hamas, disabling all of their booby traps they've built, and in an effort to uproot and find them. The newest strategy, though, that the IDF is now carrying out is they are targeting, for the first time, the political wing within Hamas leadership. They've always gone after the military wing of it, but the political wing is actually the governmental control of Hamas. And they're now targeting those leaders and taking out their public relations, taking out all of those that do normal civilian functions of controlling Hamas. I believe that's a significant step toward dismantling Hamas and ceasing their operations. Egypt has come in and tried to propose to Hamas some ideas about a 10-day ceasefire for the release of, say, 5 hostages. The U.S. has come in and said, hey, we'll give you a ceasefire for a number of days if you'll release a couple of hostages. Anything to break the logjam to get Hamas to agree to release some more hostages. In every case, Hamas has rejected it. As we have shared in past weeks with you, the Hamas operatives, they have a different kind of spirit about them in terms of being able to be cooperative and work in a cooperative fashion. In fact, I have referred to them to you. They appear to be the biblical example of what we call Amalek. The spirit of Amalek is only loves bloodshed and only specifically wants to kill. And Hamas's charter only wants to kill the Jews and kill Israel. They're not really trying to build a land for the Palestinian people. It's pure death that they're seeking for. Recently, I interviewed Mark Biltz of a fellow ministry, Messianic Ministry, up in Washington State. Here's an excerpt from that interview where we talk about the spirit of Amalek. Shalom, everybody, and welcome again. I've got Pastor Mark Biltz with me. And Mark, you and I were at the NRB not too long ago, and the comment about Amalek came up just very briefly. We didn't get a chance to really talk about that much. But in our Messianic World broadcast, we're, of course, talking about the war in Gaza with Hamas, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and, of course, Iran and the Houthi rebels. And I'm of the opinion that we're seeing the evidence of at least the spirit of Amalek, and I know you have some opinions about that. So I wanted to take a few minutes here and hear your insights into how you view the present current day events and how does it fit within the scripture that talks about the commandment for Israel concerning Amalek. So let's talk about the spirit of Amalek and who you think is Amalek today.
Absolutely. I believe that spirit of Amalek, as you said, Monty, is all throughout history, which is why in Exodus 17, God said he will be going to war with Amalek in every generation. Right. Now, I believe last century, Hitler had that spirit of Amalek, and that was the war of the Lord. And I believe right now, in this century, we are fighting that spirit of Amalek. Some of the proof is in Hebrew. The word Amalek means a nation who beheads people, who chops off heads. We just saw 70 Christians in Syria who had their heads chopped off. We know in the book of Revelation, at the end of the book, people are getting their heads chopped off. This is the spirit of Amalek. And that's exactly what Hamas did on October 7th. They wanted to cut up people, their body parts.
So let's expand that to even bigger. You know, we've got Psalms 83. Yes. Which has an incredible set of verses. And they're talking about there's this people that love bloodshed. And that, when we read Psalms 83, boy, that evokes images of what we see in the news today, and particularly with the Palestinian conflict with Israel. You want to comment on that just a little bit? Share with us.
Well, what's amazing in Psalm 83, one of those nations is Amalek.
Yeah.
And so we see that whole spirit again is going to be persuasive. That's why I'm not sure if these Abraham Accords are going to last or if they're just temporary.
So yeah. Those are the current events that are going on. They're happening right before us. And so we continue to watch this latest military campaign that just got going and see what that will produce and yield, whether or not we get any more hostages back and whether or not Hamas is willing to disarm. I don't think they're willing to disarm. I think that they're going to have to die.
And no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
You know, a lot of people don't know this, but the Hamas charter specifically states that they will be at war with Israel for eternity. And asking them to agree to the end of the war is completely contrary to their charter. There's no way they can agree to it. If they were to supposedly agree to it, it's purely for deception means. It's purely to rearm and refit and try to go back at it again. And that's what Israel cannot tolerate anymore with it. So we've got this arch enemy that has been traveling around here for the ages. And it seems like this is what we're dealing with in our present day. What would you like to see Israel do if you could be set under Netanyahu and give him the best counsel possible? What would you recommend to Bibi Netanyahu?
Never to give up. As a matter of fact, Monty, one thing that you had said reminded me, it had just come out in the Israeli news that Jared Kushner had offered Yahya Sinwar, before he died, $10 billion, and was going to allow him to be in control of Gaza if he would just quit attacking Israel. And he refused, which shows you it's not about land. It's not about money. It is totally about a ancient hatred toward the Jewish people.
Now, the interview that I had with Mark, you're going to see the full interview in a future Lion's Share broadcast. Look forward to that interview. It'll be coming up very shortly. The IDF is also carrying out additional airstrikes in Lebanon. in this last week, they sent in flyers and told Hezbollah and the Lebanese to evacuate a certain hotel that was in downtown Beirut. They discovered that Hezbollah was storing drones in that place. And after they evacuated, they went in and took it out. I guess that's what we call a ceasefire. But at the moment, there's a lot of activity that Israel is still doing against Hamas in doing it. Obviously, Lebanon would like to have Israel back out of there. They would like to have peace again, a real ceasefire. But until Hezbollah backs down and gives assurances that they're not going to continue to attack Israel, Israel's going to defend themselves. Last week, I shared with you about the Shin Bet leader who's in charge of the intel organization tracking Palestinians and Hamas, that Netanyahu wants him fired, and it went forward to the cabinet, and there was a vote of no confidence, and there's still some objection to him being fired. If he is going to be fired, it's going to be next month. And he's become kind of a folk hero for some of the people who hate Netanyahu in Israel. Just this last week, Netanyahu also shared a little bit more detail about why he doesn't trust the Shin Bet leader. It turns out on the morning of October 7th, when the attack came, that the Shin Bet leader did have information that the attack was coming that morning. And at 4:30 in the morning, he did not wake up Netanyahu to advise him. Instead, let him sleep in, and then the attack came, and we have the results that we have. Netanyahu basically is explaining the Shin Bet leader was not doing his job the way he's supposed to. Netanyahu has no confidence in him anymore for being in that position. So that's the latest news with regard to that. The Haredi party and students who are objecting to the idea of military service, but the Knesset is trying to pass a law so they cannot be exempted. So Haredi young men, the ultra-Orthodox, are going to have to serve in the IDF. Now, the Haredi parties are fighting against that in the Knesset, trying to block it, threaten the coalition because of that probe. Well, there was a protest this last week between many of the Haredi students and police over the issue of whether or not they'd serve in the military, and they actually harmed some police officers, and several of them were arrested. This is continuing to be a hot-button issue in Israel. Most of the citizens in Israel expect the ultra-Orthodox to serve in the military, just like all the other citizens of Israel. They, of course, believe that if they go study Torah at the yeshiva, somehow they're protecting Israel, they're doing their part. But it's a simple case of the religious parties being in the coalition government, getting monies to support their function and exempting their own sons from it. I think the trend is very clear that the government of Israel is not going to allow them to be exempted anymore. They're going to have to be serving in the IDF in future days. The Israel budget that had to pass to keep the government intact did pass. Ben Gavir came back into the coalition government, did vote for the budget as well. And, oh, by the way, the religious party also voted for it. They had been threatening not to vote for it. There was no point in them not voting for it. And so the budget did pass. The government is intact. And Netanyahu now has a 66-seat majority in the Knesset. You need at least 61 to have a majority. He has 66 seats. The judicial reform bill that has been a great controversy in Israel with the Netanyahu government, it too passed in the Knesset. This is the bill that reins in the judicial system within the rest of the government, the executive branch and the legislative branch of the government of Israel. And it affects the judge selection. How do judges get selected to be used in the judicial system? Earlier, it used to be strictly the purview of the judges themselves. And so you can imagine after many years how that's become convoluted and very, excuse the term, parochial in their point of view. And now they brought it into check and balance. And so that controversy has moved forward into the Knesset. Now, here in the U.S., we've had the pro-Hamas students and protests on universities. Some of the people that have been leading these protests are on visas. They are from other nations. They are Muslims as well, and they've been leading some of these protests, particularly at Columbia University and some of the other Ivy League schools. Well, the U.S. has now come in and arrested one of the key leaders that was at Columbia University. In fact, he's having deportation hearings today. And several other student leaders that have been a part of that who are on visas as also, they too have been told to leave, then they too have been arrested, and deportation proceedings are now underway for that. And while the liberals here in the country don't think that they should be deported, that they should have free speech, let me make a comment about free speech in which that anti-Jewish protests are a part of it. We all know that we can say whatever we want because we have the freedom of speech in this country guaranteed by the Constitution and the First Amendment. But all of us have heard the same lesson, that you don't have the right to be in, say, a closed theater and then suddenly yell fire. The reason being is because the people will panic and people will get hurt in trying to evacuate that theater. And so if you're going to do something or say something that's going to bring about the harm of other people, that does not qualify as free speech. And I would suggest to you that the pro-Hamas and pro-Palestinian students that are exercising their, quote, freedom of speech, free speech, that if it's harming Jewish students going to the university, harassing them and they're being attacked, and other laws are being broken, that is not free speech. That's not protected by the First Amendment. And they ought to be arrested for the same way that a man that would cause harm in a theater would be arrested if he yelled fire and a lot of people got hurt. Last week and all through this week, we've been hearing about a controversy that has to do with the U.S. security team, including the Secretary of Defense, National Security Advisor, the DNI, the Secretary of State, several people were on this program called Signal. And I'm sure you've heard the news stories where there was another gentleman who was the editor of the Atlantic magazine. He apparently was on this same loop, this string of communications. And he observed in this communication a discussion going on between the national security team about getting ready to attack the Houthi rebels. This goes back almost 2 weeks ago. Now, he observed it, and he knew that he was on that string, probably shouldn't be on that string of that discussion. That had nothing to do with him. He was not to be a participant. But somehow he had gotten on there. We're not quite sure exactly how he got there. But in any case, as a good citizen, if you suddenly discover that you're in access to what you think to be classified information, any U.S. citizen should do the right thing, and that is don't go spread it. Don't go talk about it. Shut your mouth. Maybe even notify the other people that have accidentally put you into the discussion. Hey, guys, you need to be aware. I'm here in here. I'm hearing this. I'm not sure you want me here hearing this. Any reasonable-minded citizen would know to do that. But instead, this fella, the editor of the Atlantic magazine, said, no, this is an opportunity for him to exploit the situation. So he decided to go out and announce, after the attack started, that he was privy to this information and trying to discredit, devalue, and attack Trump and his security team, and trying to present them that they're like a bunch of amateurs, they don't know what they're doing, and see, even I was on that communication, and they spread the information to me, and I shouldn't have been having access to it, and it's their fault. No, Mr. Goldberg, it is your fault as a citizen of the United States that you didn't protect the interests of the United States. Let me share something with you. As I used to be in the military, and I was a part of the military-industrial complex. In fact, in my career, I had 25 years in it. And even though I've left that and don't have a government security clearance anymore, I still see frequently in news media and other published unclassified sources classified information. I can tell what should be classified, what should not be classified. I'm aware of it. And in fact, in this news broadcast I do to you, I don't share everything with you that I hear. Some of it is not appropriate to be shared publicly. I can share that information which is appropriate for you to hear, because one of the basic things you hear about classified information, do you have a need to know it? All military activity, including the location of every ship, what it does, every airplane, what it does, it's all classified as confidential. For some reason in this country, the press, the media, thinks it's their job to expose classified information every time they get a chance to do it. Now, there is certain information that is released by our government to the media expressly to help us, the citizens, to understand what our government is doing and why they're doing it. Generally speaking, unless you hear it directly from the DOD spokesman or the Secretary of State spokesman or directly from the White House representing the president, you need to be skeptical of any information that you hear, especially from the news media, about anything classified. They're really trading mostly in rumors or under the table kinds of stuff, and many times that stuff is not real. It might be classified, but it's not real, and they're really talking through their hat. In my experience, and this is coming from the position of my own experience, I have been amazed about how the U.S. media, and I'm talking about top U.S. media representatives, can't tell the difference between a rocket and a missile. They have no understanding whatsoever of U.S. military offensive or defensive operations, and in particular, they have no idea what an aircraft carrier battle group does, or the ships that go with it, or their capabilities, or what they are designed to do. Now, we have a carrier battle group over there in the Red Sea helping to deal with the Houthi rebels. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what might be getting ready to happen. And as a result, you heard the report once the information came out. There was nothing classified in it that was released. That is correct. There was nothing classified. It was essentially content that is publicly understood by people who understand U.S. military operations. And by the way, that group that was in that signal chat, they did understand that stuff. And by the way, one of my jobs here to share with you is I try to pay attention to what's going on, particularly as it affects Israel, as it affects the prophetic scenario. Those actions do have consequences, and it does change the world that we live in. Folks, let's pray for our country. Let's pray for Israel. Thank you for viewing this program. We'd love to have you like, comment, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We also have a subscription service, lionandlamb.tv. That's available for you to sign up for. We have Yavo Magazine, which is free for you to have a subscription to. All you have to do is contact the ministry, ask to do it. Monthly, it comes out. And we're happy to announce that we have the new Zadok Priestly Calendar. It's now out. We're in the Passover season. We're in the first month of the year, and a calendar is now updated for it. By the way, it also comes with something special, a few menu selections for the holidays, including even my recipe for latkes for at Hanukkah. I'm sure you'll like it and enjoy it. Please join us on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts out. We're also on X, Telegram, and TikTok. Shabbat shalom to all of you.